and don't give a hoot. They got me at his yo-ho's. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
Welcome to another episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Larkin.
Welcome, welcome.
Yeah. Oh, here with me, as always, on the poop deck, our fearless engineer and navigator, Bishop Mondo Grimes.
Bishop,
and
yes.
Joining us via satellite from Studio B in San Luis Obispo, California, our co-host from the West Coast, Admiral Aaron Porter.
Hi, ooh, guys. Promoted this week. I love it.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Hey, Aaron. Yo-ho.
Aaron, did you notice the growl, the pirate growl in Nate's voice this morning?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was pretty impressed with that, actually.
Did that sound authentic?
Yeah, it did.
Really?
It did.
Good,
yeah,
good.
I wanted to point that out before we get going. I was pretty impressed by that.
Do you know how much rum you have to swill for that? That's, and you have to swill it. You can't just sip it.
Yeah.
Hey, another innovation this week. I mean, not only do we have, you know, great pirate inflections.
Yes.
We also have a live video feed between studios.
Check that out.
So at this moment, we can see Aaron, and Aaron can see us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Aaron can see that that Mondo is not wearing plaid shorts.
I'm not wearing the plaid shorts today.
Did you give up on the plaid shorts?
Well,
did you run out?
No, I had two pairs I was looking at, but you know, I'm trying to transition. The fall's coming. It's not here yet. what's the cutoff? Is it Labor Day? But I figure I'll give you a break, man. I figure I'll give you a break. Maybe bring it back next week for a few more podcasts and then call it quits for the year.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll keep everybody updated on the pledge shorts. Well, we got a great show today.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Mike Card is in the studio with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're going to want to hang on. We'll be back in just a minute on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. It is good to have you with us. All right, it's time to talk about the meetings here. Did you make it to the meeting, Mr. Nate?
As a matter of fact, I did. For the second week running, I made it to the Franklin meeting of the Samson Society, the Monday night meeting at Christ
All right.
Church.
And what was the topic this week?
The topic was another odd one. I don't think I've been in a meeting where this was the topic before. The topic was busyness.
Busyness.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a great one, because honestly, when you're talking about addiction and all of that, often we go to the David was not going off to war like all the other kings, so it's more laziness and lack of activity. But busyness can be just as much of a trigger as lack of activity or laziness. So tell me what came up for you guys.
Yeah, well, it was ironic for me. I was late to the meeting because I had a lot of stuff to do that day. I found myself here. See, here's the thing. What really convicts me and brings me to change more often than not is not something I hear somebody else say, but it's that thing I hear myself say in my own voice and my own words. And just the fact that whoever led the meeting picked that topic, you know, I found myself talking about a key issue in my life that I was not even recognizing as a key issue, and that is my love of activity as a distraction from what's really going on in my life. It puts me in mind of that film Changing Lanes with Ben Affleck, Samuel L. Jackson, and that where Samuel is Affleck's sponsor in a 12-step program. And late in the film, you know, he looks at Ben and he says, "You're not addicted to alcohol. You're addicted to chaos." For some people, it's Coke. For some people, it's bourbon. You're addicted to disaster, is what he says. And I found myself on Monday having to face the uncomfortable fact that, you know, now that I'm not acting out sexually, I'm still looking for a way to distract myself from my most uncomfortable feelings. I still have a deep impulse to run from God and to be self-sufficient. And so it's a great temptation for me to fill my life up with urgent activities. Yeah.
So it's odd because we were just talking about this yesterday at Vintage at our church in here on the Central Coast, and we were finishing up the book of Nehemiah and looking at the fact that one of the huge thing they only committed earlier when they had their giant repentance time to two things, and one was to keep the Sabbath. Now here they are coming back from captivity because they didn't keep Sabbath years. And almost immediately, they go back to over-busyness. They go back to not taking God seriously on the gift of the Sabbath that he gave us. And we had a long discussion, resting and having margins and letting Christ be absolutely Lord of one day, that I don't have to strive, I don't have to complete, because that's really, like you said, what busyness is. I'm trying to distract from all the things that I feel are out of control, and I can pretend to have the illusion of control through busyness. So I think that's an amazing topic.
Yeah, it was good for me. I here's my situation. We talk a lot in Samson about the daily disciplines of prayer, study, and self-examination. That's part of the path for us. For me, the biggest challenge is not learning prayer, study, and self-examination. It's maintaining prayer, study, and self-examination. Taking that time, for me, it's best early in the day to step away from the insanity of life, much of which I've created myself. Get alone with God, meditate, disconnect for a few minutes from, or sometimes it just means sitting with my fear or my sadness, whatever it is that's been driving the bus. And not distract myself from it. If I'll do that, then I do find that life slows down. I become less busy but more effective, and life becomes a lot more fulfilling. But my I have this inner tendency, just that draws me toward busyness and chaos. So it was great to talk about that on Monday night. It was a good thing, and it made for a better week for me.
Yeah,
how about
great.
You? Did you make a meeting, Aaron?
We did. We tried out a new location. There's a pub with an upstairs room that's closed, and they let us go up there. So we got to be
room.
We were alone in the upper room of the Crooked Kilt.
Yes.
So
yes.
That is the place that pastors ought to go and have their meetings, I suppose. And this week we began a discussion about the Silas cycle, which Nate, you and I started talking about last week.
Yeah.
The natural way that Silas relationships go. I don't think I've met anyone who sticks with a Silas for more than 2, maybe 3 years. Like 3 would be amazing. 2's a lot. So I'd say between 1 and 2 years. And there's a natural cycle that's okay, but then breaking up with your Silas is a painful thing.
Yeah.
So that this is a conversation that we want to understand a little bit more about. We want to relieve some of that tension. And so we will keep you posted on that as we come to some conclusions about how stereotypical we are.
I'm going to be really interested to hear what you guys come to. You know, we say very often in Samson that everybody needs Christianity is a team sport, not an individual event. You got to walk with other people. There'll be one person who's closest at any given time, the one guy you're calling every day, that's your Silas. But the assumption is that that's not a permanent relationship. He's a trustworthy traveling companion for this stretch of the road. You're probably going to, there's going to be some ebb and flow, some change in relationship. Even though we say that, and even though we're guys, and it's easier for guys than girls, it's still, I have found, is disconcerting and uncomfortable when you come to the conclusion that it's time to start walking with another guy.
Go ahead. We have so many We have a lot of baggage with rejection, and this feels like a lot of rejection. We don't want to be rejected, and we don't want to reject someone else.
Right.
But the truth is, sometimes Silas relationships become less effective because we've grown closer to that person, and so now making a quick phone call isn't as easy. Now we're on the phone for a half an hour with them. Now we're exchanging. We almost become co-Silases. So there are reasons where it's not a rejection to move on to a different Silas. Sometimes it's because the relationship has grown. And if we can all acknowledge that, then it can become easier for us to move into these different relationships. And then our friendship pool actually grows. It's not about shrinking. It's growing.
Yeah, that's what I'm grateful for. My former Silases are still part of my team. Mm. It's just a different guy stepped into the quarterback role.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we take a break here?
Okay. We got some great music.
Why don't you kick us off then with a little Michael Card, maybe?
Sure will.
In Eden, the darkening garden was still, unwet by all the tears from the sky. The burden of that disobedient fight brought all the tears the fallen world would cry. The unwelcome tears that they never had known coursed down their fallen faces in surprise. All they ever had seen was the light of his face, but now that sin had entered in, their tears would fall like rain. Falling tears from fallen eyes, our faces with an unaccustomed stain. We were driven from the garden beneath the cloudless sky, for human tears are older than the rain.
All right, welcome back once again to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are sitting down with Nate and Mondo. We've got Mike Card in the studio. But before we move on to the interview, Nate, we need an update on our friend Daniel Razum. Many guys know this is our friend, the street musician from North Carolina. So, Nate, give us the update.
Yeah, longtime listeners might remember Daniel from episode 13 of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's a story, you know, we've come to love. It's part of Samson lore. Daniel, a homeless, crack-addicted African-American street musician, God ordains for our path to cross his a couple of years ago on the 2008 Samson Summer Road Cruise. We met him in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and God formed a very unlikely bond that enriched all of us. Daniel wound up traveling with us that summer. Aaron and the brothers in San Luis really treated him like a king when he was there. So a month after he started with us, he's opening for Tony Campolo.
quite a night that was.
Playing a brand new guitar and looking and sounding like a new man. Daniel then came back to Franklin. He was my neighbor for about a year and traveled around through the Samson network, lived for a while in Indianapolis. Now, we didn't publicize this, but those of us closest to Daniel knew from the very beginning that he was traveling under an assumed name. Daniel Razum is not his given name. And there was a reason for that, because there was a warrant out for his arrest in his home state, North Carolina. Mm. And, of course, you know, the immediate solution is you talk about turning himself in, let's get the legal situation settled. The complication is that due to previous convictions, and he'd never been charged with a violent crime, but drug-related offenses going back 25 years, Daniel had been classified by North Carolina as a habitual felon. Wow. And under the three-strike rule, one more conviction would send him to prison for life.
Wow.
I actually contacted and spoke with a couple of criminal defense attorneys in the county where the charge is pending. and they couldn't give me any comfort that he would really have a chance of escaping prison. Their advice was to stay out of state and stay out of trouble. Well, Daniel's not had a problem staying out of trouble, but staying out of state has proven a little more difficult. It was the death of his father, and I traveled with him back to visit family then. Reunion with his wife, who mm-hmm. had divorced him years ago when he was in prison. Reconnection with his family. Mm-hmm. And eventually, Daniel was drawn by family ties to go back home. Went back to Winston-Salem, began ministering on the street, doing what he does. Life is not perfect for Daniel, but it's been good, and his story is a wonderful example of you know, redemption.
Mm-hmm.
But these charges have been hanging over him, and he's become less and less comfortable with unilaterally making the decision to stay out of prison. So he actually called me and called Pete Gall, who was very instrumental, really the key guy in drawing him into Samson a couple years ago, and told us that he really felt what he needed to do was turn himself in. I initially, of course, resisted that idea. But Daniel was convinced that he needed to let God be God, and he needed to be in a place where if what God really wants for him, if the place he's to minister for the rest of his life is in prison, then that's going to be the only place he finds fulfillment. So his wife, Annette, he packed up all his stuff, doesn't know whether he'll see it again, and then Annette drove him to the sheriff's department in Greensboro, North Carolina, last Monday night, and he surrendered to authorities. He is now being held in the Guilford County Detention Center. At this point, he's facing a felony charge of failure to appear, and as well as a couple of misdemeanor charges of failure to appear. The story, just in brief, is that he had been picked up before he met us, not long before he met us, had been picked up on a minor drug possession charge. The police had threatened him with jail, had offered him, they'd pressured him, as you know, I understand, it's what they do, it's what they have to do, to testify against somebody higher up in the food chain in the drug world. And Daniel had agreed to do that. They said if he did it, they wouldn't charge him. If he didn't, they would. And in the end, he skipped. Hmm. He didn't appear to testify. And so he's facing those charges. I've spoken with him a couple times this week. He is he's in a sober mood. Still a man of faith, but he needs encouragement. So here's what I'd like to ask our listeners to do, especially if your life's been touched by Daniel's, if you've heard his music, maybe met him, if you've heard his story here on the podcast. The Bible makes it clear that those of us who are Christians have an obligation to remember those in prison. I've got to tell you, I have not been very good about that obligation. Even though I live in a nation with the highest rate of incarceration in the world, I live most of my life as though the prisons don't exist. But now that I've got a friend in there, it's very much on my mind. So I, of course, have written to Daniel. I'd like to give you his address. Don't write to Daniel Razum. It won't get there. You got to write to Gary Sibley. That's his real legal name. Gary Sibley. And the address is Guildford, Guildford, Guildford Correctional Detention County Detention Center, Guildford County Detention Center, 201 East Sycamore Street in Greensboro, North Carolina, 27401.
Let's give that once again, because that was way too fast.
All right, here we go. Gary Sibley, S-I-B-L-E-Y, Gary Sibley, Guildford County Detention Center, 201 East Sycamore Street. That's 201 East Sycamore Street, Greensboro, North Carolina. And here's that zip one more time, 27401.
All right. Well, let's man, let's love on him from a distance, brothers, because that would touch his heart in ways you can't even imagine. And we will be right back with Mike Card.
How long will you forget, oh Lord? How long, how long? How I long to see your face, oh Lord? How long will you hide? How I struggle with my thoughts, oh Lord? How long, how long? Suffer sorrow in my heart, oh Lord? How long will you hide? Lord, how long, how long? Give me light or I can live no more. How long will you hide? Will my foes rejoice when they see me fall? How long, how long? We have overcome and now they call. How long will you hide?
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. Before we get to Mike, we've got one more thing to discuss, and that is a short screenplay that, Nate, you are involved in helping with in some way. Tell us about this, because this is exciting. This is Hollywood tabloid gossip exciting. Feed the fire.
Well, I don't know. I liked this a kid who sent me the screenplay, and then a couple of guys came to visit me. It's a short film, going to be about a 25-minute film that's going to shoot next month here in Nashville. Working title is 10 Seconds. Its ambition is to explore the link between sexual addiction and human sex trafficking or involuntary prostitution. It's an ambitious film. They're trying to do a whole lot in 25 minutes, but they're very open to input. In fact, I'm going to meet with the cast on the 9th of September just to talk with them about sex addiction, and I'm going to work some with the male lead.
Yeah.
I won't be in town for the shoot. It's the 17th through the 21st, I think, of September. But I'll tell you what I like about the film. I really like that the main character, who is a sex addict, his actions are not whitewashed. In fact, I had some eerie moments reading the script because it took me back to the darkest days of active addiction for me. But what they're really trying to show is here's a guy who really does not want to be doing what he's doing. He's not just this evil monster without a conscience. He's a Christian. He's a married guy. He's got kids. He's in business. But he's got something's got him by the tail, and it's just tearing his life apart. And you see him fighting against something bigger than he is. At the same time, he's feeding or he's being used as fuel for a very evil enterprise.
I definitely thought of you when I was reading the script as you watch him reacting from his deep shame, where he's trying not to act out into playing the role of almost the overly good father, that he's going over the top with his kids. And it seemed like they nailed that part of your story in their script.
Yeah, it was... It was kind of tough to read that because I could see myself. The compensatory – that's a good observation, Aaron. The compensatory behavior, coming out of the deep waters of shame and then just going over the top. with my wife or my kids, but there was always something very hollow about it. And I'm sure that at some level, everybody sensed that Nate wasn't bringing his full weight to the game. So it's not a film that brings solution, but it is a film that opens issues. And I like it. In fact, any of the listeners, if you'd like to get a look at the script, just shoot me an email at nate@samsonsociety.org and put the word script in the subject line, and I'll send you back a copy of the script.
That makes me less special all of a sudden. I really...
You seem hurt, Aaron.
I'm hurt. I mean, not that I want to keep good things from pirate monks. I just don't want them to have good things.
You saw it first.
Yeah.
You saw it first, Aaron.
Oh, okay. All right, back to special. All right, guys, so in the subject line script, it's okay now.
All right.
Well, awesome. All right, let's transition to our special guest here, because he's been patient. So, Nate, give the introduction.
Well, it is just an enormous honor to have with us here in the studio today the endlessly creative, always fascinating Michael Karb.
Wow, I'm glad I got up to come to this.
I got to tell you, Michael, I have wanted you on the podcast for a very long time. You were on the initial list of dream guests, mm-hmm. but I haven't even asked you because I know how busy you are.
Not that busy.
But I shot you off the email, and you responded so quickly and so graciously. Thank you for taking time.
Thank you.
To join us here.
Thank you. I've been following the trail of the pirate monks since before the book came out. You gave me the initial manuscript that I was...
And you wrote that great endorsement for it.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, very glad to read. Yeah, it's a great book.
Well, Michael, I don't even know where to get started with your story. I mean, here you are, a pioneer in contemporary Christian music. I don't know how you feel about that approbation.
not tremendously thrilled, but thank you. Uh-huh. I'll take any credit.
You would pull your guitar out of the covered wagon. It was a beautiful thing.
Well, the pioneer part is not the part that discouraged me as much as the contemporary Christian music part.
Yeah. Hasn't gone exactly where all of us wanted it to go, necessarily.
Yeah, but it's dying now, so that's a good thing.
And Michael, you're also just a tremendous teacher and Bible scholar. And let me ask you if you can kind of encapsulate. I know you didn't mean to go into Christian music. That was never in your plan.
Exactly. Yeah.
How'd you get there?
Well, a man who was investing in my life, who you knew before he died, Bill Lane, who... You know, I just basically wanted to please. He said, I think you have gifts for music. And I was perfectly satisfied to try to make myself a clone of him, which I never could have done.
Now, you were in college.
I was in college. I was doing biblical studies with him. He was overseeing my program.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also the pastor of a little biracial church, Cecilia Memorial Presbyterian Church in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And so I was with him every day of the week. I was with him in class every day. And we would watch cartoons together on Saturday morning. He was a big Smurfs fan. And I know PhD from Harvard commenting on the, you know, all the implications and the Christology of the Smurfs. It was very interesting. But and then Sunday at church together. So
Yeah.
He was the person that just put my life together, took the pieces of my life and put it together.
Was he the dominant male figure in your life?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I was one of those guys that was always looking for a father. I wasn't my dad was a doctor, wasn't tremendously close to my dad. My dad was a great man, but he just wasn't there much. And Bill was the father that I finally found, and who was praying that somebody would come to him and ask for a block of time. So it was a great moment to find this remarkable man who came to Franklin, you know, in 98 and died in 99, came here to die.
You made know. A huge impact in that one year.
He sure did. Yeah. He sure did. So
so how did you start writing songs? How did that happen?
It was him. He gave me his sermon for the next week. His typical Bill, he was done with his sermon on Tuesday.
You know. I hate guys like that.
I know. And he said, write a chorus, you know, write a chorus. And I would love to say that I I heard God's voice and there were angels and this luminous moment of realizing that this was the call. But I just did it for 6 years to please Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, I think from that I've learned that all we have, any of us have to offer is mixed motives. I mean, all Billy Graham has is mixed motives.
Yeah.
So. But God still uses those, and that's a good thing. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Now, how did you make your way to Nashville? How did that happen?
Well, I was born here. I grew up here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And my,
you're the one.
Yeah, I am. I'm. All the rest of them are interlopers. Yeah. You know, Michael W. Smith. What is that? Texas. You know, Chapman. He's from Paducah, Kentucky. What is that? Right.
Yeah.
No, I was actually born here, and my dad was a doctor to a lot of musicians.
Oh.
So I grew up around the Scruggs family mostly. Those are the big musical people in my life. Earl Scruggs, the banjo player.
Wow.
His sons Randy Steve
sure.
and I have bands together and played together. And,
really?
And Steve or Randy, the older brother, is the guy that started me making records. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
In 81. Before you were probably even born.
No, I was about five.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really appreciate about you, Michael, is the way that you are always wedding. I mean, you're such a thoughtful writer. It's like you're listening to you're looking for a hook and you're listening to trends and mm-hmm. you're going to write the song that sounds like the current song on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Would have done better if I'd done that. But
your stuff comes out of such a deep place,
yeah.
and that place most of the time is biblical study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm
still trying to please Bill in many ways. Though Bill died, you know, how many years ago? 3 or 4 years ago.
How many books have you written?
I'm not really sure. I think 19 or 20. A lot of books.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there is one book that I would, in particular, love to talk about. But maybe before we go there, mm-hmm. we can listen. There's a special song that you did want us to hear. Talk to us about this song. We'll play it.
In 30 years of writing music, this is my favorite song that I've done. I wrote the lyrics and wrote the music with Vance Taylor. Vance is a keyboard player from Earth, Wind & Fire. Just a beautiful brother, lives in Atlanta, Georgia. And this is an invitation to lament. This is a song that says it's okay.
Mm.
In fact, this is what the Bible's really calling us to do with our confusion and our sorrow.
If you are wounded, and if you're alone, if you are angry, if your heart is cold, stone, if you have fallen, and if you are weak, then come find the word of God that only the suffering seek. Come lift up your sorrows and offer your pain. Make a sacrifice of all your shame there in your wilderness. He's waiting for you to worship him with your wounds, for he's wounded. He has not stuttered, and he has not lied. When he said, come unto me, you're not disqualified. When you're heavy laden, you may want to depart. Who know sorrow, they're closest to his heart. Come lift lift up your sorrows and offer your pain. Come make a sacrifice of all your share there in your wilderness. He's waiting for you to worship him with your wounds, for he's wounded too. In this most holy place, he's made a sacred space for those who will enter in and trust to cry out to him. And you'll find no curtain there, no reason left for fear. There's perfect freedom here to weep every unwept tear. Come lift up your sorrows,
lift up your sorrows,
and offer your pain. Come make a sacrifice of all your share there in your wilderness.
There in your wilderness.
He's waiting for you.
He's waiting for you
to worship him with your wounds, for he's wounded.
Michael, a few years ago, I had the privilege of sitting in on a class that you taught on Wednesday nights at Christ Community Church, mm-hmm. Before the publication of the book Sacred Sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you were kind of, I got the impression you were kind of road testing the material,
yeah.
Developing as you went.
Yeah.
And then did the album come out of that? Or were you,
yeah,
kind of working it all at once?
It did, huh?
And it really struck me at the time because I was in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming face to face with the fact that behind an awful lot of my insane activity, my crazy acting out, were feelings of deep grief,
mm-hmm.
Feelings that I did not, a sadness I did not want to face, I did not want to feel.
Yeah.
And so my choice for many, 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 many years was to medicate them, and I still prefer to medicate them.
Sure. Much easier than dealing with it.
Yeah, rather go to busyness,
yeah.
If not to lust,
mm-hmm.
to distract myself from sadness and grief.
Mm-hmm.
I remember running into a therapist friend on the street, and a guy I hadn't seen in a few years. And so I asked him about his practice, how's it going, what kind of work are you doing? He says, well, I'm working with sex addicts, and I'm doing a lot of work with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of making a joke, I said, yeah, those two sometimes go together.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a hand on my shoulder, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, no, they always go together.
Wow.
There's always some sadness. Now, how do I deal with that as a Christian? I was raised in a church where, you know, Sunday morning was a pep rally. And
you leave that at the door.
Yeah, 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 right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You opened my eyes to a whole different way of looking at the faith. Can you expound on that some for us?
I think it's something, partly for me, it was a result of being discipled in an African-American church where you're not told to leave that at the door. In a lot of churches anyway, a place is still made for people that are hurting in a community where a lot of people are hurting, right?
Yeah.
Having seen that in the context of those two churches, I went to the scriptures, and it was just one of those, we hold these truths to be self-evident. It was one of those self-evident truths that what the Bible says we do with our confusion and our sorrow and our loneliness and all those things is that we offer them up to the Lord as an act of worship, which was completely un-American. Not American Christianity, but if you look at the history of the African American community, and you look at the history of Israel.
Yeah.
Starting really, I think, with Psalm 51, when David realized after this disaster with Bathsheba that it wasn't the blood of bulls and goats that God wanted; it was his broken spirit and his contrite heart. And I think beginning with Psalm 51, everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything changed, and then Jesus obviously lives this out because he lives everything perfectly out, and I think it's an exquisite idea that at the point in his life when he was most being used by God, Jesus was lamenting. I think that's a powerful idea because I think that's true with us.
Yeah.
It might be that the point in your life when God is most using you is the point when you're lamenting.
Yeah.
And if that's not an encouragement to open up, that's just, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I'd love to look at this a little further. Yeah, I grew up in churches where we sang a lot of scripture choruses. Mm-hmm. We sang a lot of them from the Psalms. So as I read through the Psalms, there are some of them where I can find I know them. I know a tune to this.
Mm-hmm.
But more than half of them, there's no tune.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't sing
right, Psalm 13, or 69, or 22. Yeah, right,
and yet
81.
That was part of the hymn book of Israel.
Exactly.
And how beautiful it is that
and more, there are more Psalms of lament than any other kind of psalm in the Psalter.
Yeah.
That's
isn't
stunning.
That amazing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
I see that hand.
Yeah, see the hand in California. I think this is so important because I was doing some worship studies about the time that people were really into the all of our songs are us-focused. We need to just be God-focused. Mm-hmm. We need to just lift up his character. And I kept thinking, man, has anybody read the Psalms?
Yeah.
That God wrote the Psalms for us to understand what he understands about us.
Yeah.
And he gives us permission to say things like, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long will I wrestle with my thoughts? And every day I have trials in my heart.
Yeah.
That God gives us more than permission to bring our brokenness to him,
right,
grapple with blaming him, and come out with, but I'm going to trust in your unfailing love. I don't feel it, but I'm going to trust in it.
And I think I've walked on you.
I was just going to say that permission is something that we've robbed from people, and it's amazing that you got to grow up and be discipled in the church that gave you full permission.
Well, and I think it's like you said, it's more than permission. I mean, it's this invitation, it's this sort of wooing, and I would think that the work of the Samson Society, which is so much done, kind of brother to brother sort of thing, but ultimately, I'm asking you, ultimately, is it not this work that you do between you and the Lord, where he says, okay, let's take this, let's see what we can do with this.
Yeah.
And it becomes worship, which is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, really, I've got to tell you, I'm very uplifted in a Samson meeting when a guy articulates his sadness, anger, fear, failure. Sometimes a guy is just giving words to something in my own life that I don't have words for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the fact that he is just admitting it and allowing us to help him carry it is, just in and of itself, it's so different from the Old Testimony times that I was used to growing up, where it always had to be a positive confession.
Yeah,
and,
and
I'm always putting this, I've got to tie it up in a pretty bow.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Oh, I know. I grew up in a church like that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, Bill's been gone 10 years, more than 10 years.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, March 7th, 1999, he died. Yeah.
And I know you've not had a relationship of that kind at close since.
No, yeah. Always looking for that other person. But, the older you get, well, I did really with Denny Denson. Then he died.
Yeah.
And Ben Johnson was a person like that for me. Then Ben died. You know, you get to be 53, those guys start dying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you and I are the same age. And people start looking to us to be that guy.
Yeah, well, I remember at Bill's funeral, Denny said, "Who's going to fill his shoes?" And I looked at Denny and said, "Well, maybe it's time for us to fill our shoes." You know.
Yeah. But you, nonetheless, have got brothers here in Franklin.
Definitely, most definitely.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what it means in your heart and mind and in your own life experience? What's it mean to walk with another man?
Well, I'm very much the product of first Bill, but then, you know, the other person that's been so big in my life has been Scott Rowley. I mean, we met 30 years ago. The day we met, we became best friends and have been best friends ever since. And except for one six-month departure where we disagreed about something and had a big fight and didn't talk for 6 months. I mean, he's been a constant presence for me. I mean, I'm having lunch with him today.
So,
I'm very much the product of people. As a very young 6 or 7 year old, there was an older man in my church who walked with me and discipled me for years and years and years. And the tone of our relationship, he came to me and he said, "Look, I want you to know, I was in trouble for something one time. I got in trouble with my parents." And he came to me and said, "I want you to know I'm on your side, right or wrong. Especially when you're wrong, I want you to know I'm on your side." So I've had men like that kind of watching my back for a long time. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's the gospel. I mean, when I was about 20, I realized, cause this guy's name was Basil Edwards. He was an older guy in our church. And I realized when I was about 20, that was the gospel. Because Jesus says, you know, right or wrong, I'm on your... In fact, especially when you're wrong, I'm going to be on your side, which is a pretty cool thing to grow up with. Yeah.
All right, we're going to talk more with Michael when we come back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
We are not scattered strangers. We are one, and we are free. Though we have broken faith and divided, we are one family. It's time we weep together for the time we've been apart, for our hatred of each other, for our stubborn hearts, for the prisoner we've forgotten in a foreign land. If we would weep their tears, then maybe we'd finally understand. We are not scattered strangers. We are one, and we are free. Though we have broken faith and divided, we are one family. When he cried out to the Father on bended knee, in the garden where he pleaded for our unity, when he shouted from the cross that it finally was done, I ask you, is that not enough for us to become one? We are not scattered strangers. We are one, and we are free. Though we have broken faith and divided, we are one family. We are not scattered strangers. We are one, and we are free. Though we have broken faith and divided, We are one family.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We're in the studio with Mike Card, and Nate got to talk about a book that he thought was good.
And I, just Nate.
I'm yeah, not I, the I can, only I, person. Well, actually, I mean, yeah, I can, it was a gold medallion award winner, I think.
I can see how perhaps I misphrased that. But
okay.
Anyways, I've been hearing about grace. I now accept it, whether it's given or not, by you people in Tennessee. Yes.
I'm still on your side, Aaron.
We are a very gracious people, by the way, Aaron. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Bless your
yeah,
heart.
I don't even know how to respond to that, but... We liberal California people, we don't believe it, you Bible belters. Anyways, I realize I've just killed your demographic there. Yeah. This will be the last of my co-hosting from the West Coast, evidently. Anyways, I want to talk about a book that evidently has been out for a little while on freedom. And I think I really thought of our pirate monk community because I think a lot of people were looking for freedom and they climbed into self-soothing thinking I have some right to this, and then they found out all they did was climb into slavery.
Ding, ding.
And then they're looking for freedom by getting out of it, but what they don't get, I think the movie Instinct with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Anthony Hopkins has one of the best all-time scenes on the gospel, and it's when crazy Anthony Hopkins sticks duct tape over Cuba Gooding Jr.'s mouth, and I think he has a pencil to his throat, and he says, "What did I take from you?" And he writes down first, freedom. And Anthony Hopkins says, "What do you mean? You never had freedom. You're a slave to your job. You're a slave to your life. What did I take from you?" And he writes down, control. He says, "You never had control. I could have done this any time. One last chance. What did I take from you?" And finally, he writes down, my illusions. That freedom is an illusion in the way we view it if we don't understand that it's only searching for a righteous and good master.
Mm.
So, Mike, tell us about this because we need to hear it.
Well, I think you just did. I mean, that was a beautiful sort of overview of this fact that the world offers us freedom, but it always ends up being slavery, right? And then Christ comes to us and says, take up my yoke. And that's the only freedom you'll ever have. It's a wonderful paradox. One of those paradoxes that I don't want to go away. But the only true freedom is to submit to this gentle yoke, and say with Paul and James and Jude and Peter and Mary and so many others in the New Testament. Well, Jesus, I mean, he comes in the form of a slave, says Paul. That's where the real freedom is.
So how does that play out for a guy that finds himself enslaved right now to some kind of sin and has been looking for a way out of that sin to find freedom? But I'm afraid that just means becoming a free agent once again and being his own master.
Yeah.
How practically can they engage what you just said?
Well, I mean, you really said it in that really, really insightful overview statement. I mean, I think we opt out for addictions, thinking that there's freedom there. And I think, you know, we have to redefine all those things and understand that, you know, when I click on the computer, when I, whatever form the addiction is, you know, when I go looking for whatever it is I go looking for or take or smoke or whatever it is I'm addicted to, we've got to stop this illusory thinking that that's where freedom is going to free me from something. It's only more and more bondage. And then at the same time, we've got to redefine, because I think a lot of us, you know, think of Christianity and think of Christ definitely as some sort of bondage. Sure. You know, certainly when we look at most other Christians or the Christian institution of the church in America, we think of bondage. And we're probably not too far off, but the biblical idea that the body of Christ is this basin and towel, you know, that real freedom comes when I begin to serve Christ. And I think if you listen to the testimony of anybody who's really dealt definitively, if you can deal definitively with addiction, that they're going to amen that, right?
The whole reason that early recovery didn't work for me was that I was determined to be a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to submit to a fellowship. I didn't want to submit to a sponsor. I didn't want to, you know, no.
Yeah.
And yet, That really is the only place where real freedom is found.
Yeah.
I think we definitely have to acknowledge out loud that God's version makes no sense.
Yes.
To our flesh world, and so all we can offer is for somebody to step into it in faith and find out if God is who he says he is, because you're never going to see it up front. You got to walk into it.
Well, and like every other Christian truth, you're going to see it incarnated in people's lives. I mean, I think that's what the wonderful thing God does for us. He incarnates truth, certainly in the big I incarnation of Jesus, who comes as a servant, but is the freest man that, you know, ever walked the planet. But then it gets lived out in the, you know, like in Nate's life and in your life and other people that, you know, that are have articulated, you know, having come from bondage into this glorious freedom of the children of God sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining this conversation, and appreciate all you do. You're such a big part of the community here in Franklin, Tennessee.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I look forward to how can our listeners, by the way, find your stuff and stay up with you?
Well, you know, there's michaelcard.com, like everybody else got their .com. But then I've got a Facebook page called The Biblical Imagination that everything that I'm currently working on I sort of share with people. And that's been a real encouraging thing to me. Facebook has been a good thing. Boy, you share a prayer concern, and all of a sudden, click, 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 all these people are praying for you. So, yeah, go to the Facebook Biblical Imagination page, and you'll see kind of what's going on there.
All right, yeah. Great. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk podcast.
The world weeps its woe. So how could it be that my own eyes are dry? So open my eyes and open my heart and grant me the gift of your grieving and awaken in me the compassion to weep. Just one of the tears of the world. When God walked among us in the fullness of time, he wept tears as old as the world. Acquainted with sorrow, he took up the cup and drank every drop of the poison that heals. So open my eyes and open my heart and grant me the gift of your grieving and awaken in me the compassion to weep. Just one of the tears of the world. So comes the call of this sorrowful man to set our small sadness aside, to come now and follow, no matter the cost, to follow him boldly and wait in the tide.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are here with Nate Larkin, Mike Card, and Aaron Porter. So what's going on for next week, guys? Who's our lucky, wonderful guest in the studio?
We got Scott and Christine Dente from Out of the Gray coming in next week.
Oh, yeah. Right.
We'll talk about couples issues. How do husband and wife walk this path together from a pair that's been doing it for a while? That'll be cool.
There you go. Now, what kind of events do we have coming up for the Samson guys?
We've got a 48 Hours of Frankness coming up end of September in North Carolina, and we will be talking with Ken Chester next week to get those details. But If you are in the North Carolina area, it's going to be a great thing, and there is room for you at this time. So stay tuned for more details.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that'll be Valley Cruces Retreat Center. Just to put it on your calendar, September 24th through 26th, there are some details on the main page at SamsonSociety.org.
And again, we guys, we still love gifts in the P.O. box here in Franklin, Tennessee.
And letters.
Letters.
You can reach us at letters@SamsonSociety.org, or you can mail anything non-explosive to Box 224, Franklin, Tennessee, 37065. Well, until next week, it's Nate, Mondo, and Aaron saying goodbye from the Pirate Monk podcast.
Recovery. You see, there is no shame in living for real.